have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
I hear singing, and there's no one there. I smell blossoms, and the trees are bare. All day long I seem to walk on air. I wonder why, I wonder why. I keep tossing in my sleep at night, and what's more, I've lost my appetite. Stars that used to twinkle in the skies are twinkling in my eyes. I wonder why.
You don't need analyzing. It is not so surprising that you feel very strange but nice. Your heart goes pitter-patter. I know just what's the matter, because I've been there once or twice. Put your head on my shoulder. You need someone who's older. A rub down with a velvet glove. There is nothing you can take to relieve that pleasant ache. You're not sick, you're just in love. You don't need analyzing. It is not so surprising that you feel very strange but nice. Your heart goes in a patter. I know just what's the matter, because I've been there once or twice. Put your head on my shoulder.
In my sleep
need someone
at night.
Who's older.
And
up
what's
down
more,
with
I lost my appetite.
There is nothing you can take to relieve that pleasant
thing.
You're not sick,
eyes,
you're just
I
in love.
I hear singing. And there's no
it is not
one there.
So surprising that
I
you feel very strange but nice.
Your
heart goes pitter-patter. I know just
air.
What's the matter,
why,
because I've been there once or twice.
Why.
Put your head on my shoulder. Need someone
night.
Who's older.
And
drop down
more
with a bell's bell.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces, and boy, do we have two wonderful masterpieces for you tonight. We just listened to a song from the Irving Berlin No Business Like Show Business movie of the 1950s, and the singers were Donald O'Connor and Ethel Merman. I once got to meet Donald O'Connor. It was towards the latter part of his career. He was performing at Seattle's Paramount Theater, and I, as a parking lot operator, ran the parking lot behind the theater, and Mr. O'Connor had requested that I save a space for him. A young lady of about 10 or 12 recognized Donald O'Connor and rushed up to him and excitedly said, "Mr. O'Connor, can I ask you a question about your movies?" And he smiled and said, "Yes, sweetheart, what is it?" She asked Donald O'Connor, "What was Francis the Talking Mule really like?" And Donald O'Connor smiled at her, but then he looked at his wife, who was standing next to him, like, "Sweetheart, has my career come to this?" But the young lady didn't realize what a great talent she was looking at. And Mr. O'Connor was so gracious. He shook my hand and I got to ask him a couple questions. Well, we just listened to Donald O'Connor singing from the 1950s, but now we're going to go back in the second program tonight. We're going to listen to Donald O'Connor from the 1940s, about 1944, during World War II. He's a very young kid at that time, about 19 years old. But he's in a suspense episode, and I think you'll really find it interesting. And then our first episode is from the Whistler series, which you're going to find on Radio Masterpieces as one of my favorite shows. And so suspense. They both had fantastic plots. And those were the days when they didn't have TV and the only entertainment was the movies or the radio. So they really got good actors and actresses on these programs. And the scripts were Trey Magnificent. No wonder I got such a poor grade in French. Well, anyway, if you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at RadioMasterpieces.com. Sure like to know what you'd like to hear. Thank you so much for tuning in. And now, let's enjoy our two great mysteries.
Strange Story, Murder in Mind.
The Hollister house looked as permanent as the hillside it occupied, in the exclusive Terrace Heights district on the outskirts of town. The house itself sprawled along the crest of the hill, overlooking the rambling wooded ground. That late afternoon in early spring, Gil Hollister and his wife Vicky sat facing one another on the broad terrace. Neither spoke for a time, for they were waiting for something to happen. And then Gil sprang to his feet and started pacing the stone-floored terrace.
We ought to be hearing something by now. It shouldn't take this long.
Oh, be quiet, will you, Gil? I'm trying to listen.
I'm trying not to.
Don't tell me you're sorry you did it.
I'm not sorry, Vicky. I'm not anything. Just wish it were over, that's all.
If you did what you were supposed to do, we won't have much longer to wait. Oh, Gil, stop pacing.
I've got to do something. How about a drink?
Not for me. But you look like you could use one.
Yes, I guess I could.
You move rigidly, mechanically, over to the bar under the striped canopy on the side of the terrace. Go through the motions of making a highball with unsteady hands. And your mind is turning over and over. What could have gone wrong, Gil? Should have happened by now. Belle drove away from the house 5 minutes ago. And then you hear it. A car coming up the road. You freeze inside. Vicky leans forward in her chair. And then as the taxi rounds the curve and comes into view...
Gil. It's Belle. She's back. How did she...
Shut up.
What are you...
I said shut up.
Oh, dear me. Oh, children, I've just had the most terrifying experience. Really terrifying.
Why, what's the matter, Belle?
Oh, let me get my breath. Oh, my goodness. I'm still trembling. I was fortunate enough to get a taxi to bring me back up.
But what happened? Well,
I cannot understand it, Vicky. I certainly wasn't driving any faster than I usually do down our road. But my goodness, that last curve, you know, before the main gate? Why, I went to put on my brakes to slow down a little, and there were no brakes. No brakes at all.
You don't look at Vicky Gill. You can't. You just keep staring at Belle. Belle, your stepmother, sitting there quite alive, recounting the frightening details of her nearly fatal accident. No brakes on her car, Gil. Just when she needed them most, there were no brakes on her car. You wonder how she made it at all. She wasn't supposed to, was she, Gil?
Both front fenders and the grill smashed in something terrible.
Oh, my dear, what a frightful experience. Oh, do let me take you to your room and you lie down for a while.
I'll call Dr. Stratton, Belle. You've had quite a shock.
Oh, my goodness, no. I'm as good as new right now, Gil. Now, don't you darlings worry about me. Oh, I must call Mrs. Morgan at the center. She was expecting me. And then the garage. I must call them to pick up the car.
Let me do that for you.
Oh, no, dear. Thank you. It won't take a minute. And it'll take my mind off things. After all, Gil, I want to be active while I'm still able. I might have been killed, you know.
Yes, Gil, she might have been killed. You watch her bounce happily into the house, smiling and humming. She seems glad to be alive after her near accident. You stand looking after her, and you're suddenly aware that you've dropped your guard. You're no longer tense, just a little stunned, a little amazed.
What is that stepmother of yours? Pioneer stock or something? Won't anything kill her?
Nothing has so far.
She won't drown. She won't trip down a flight of stairs. And she can drive a car without brakes around steep curves.
Maybe she's charmed. Maybe she's supposed to go on living. On and on.
Spending all your money so there'll be nothing left for you to inherit.
Oh, well, she was Dad's wife. She's entitled to something.
Yes, but she's taking everything. All we've got is an allowance.
Well, I guess Dad never thought too much of the way I handled money. Maybe he thought it would last longer with her.
If we wait for her to die a natural death, you won't even inherit her good health.
Well, good Lord, Vicky, we've tried, haven't we? I've done everything you've suggested. What else can I do?
I'm not sure yet. But I'll think of something. And this time it will work.
Yes, Vicky's the planner, Gil, and you're the executioner. Yes, beautiful Vicky. She amazes you, doesn't she? For the next few days, you know that Vicky is biding her time, turning a plan over in her practical mind for another accident to Belle. A plan that will work this time. One late afternoon, you're in the library with Vicky and Belle, with Belle carrying the bulk of the conversation. And, as usual, she's on her favorite subject, the Community Social Work Center.
Oh, dear, we're simply swamped with work. Mrs. Morgan and I are up to our ears, literally. Oh, but it is satisfying when you help raise the downtrodden from, well, the very dead. It's very satisfying. You know, you two should really become active at the center. Social work is stimulating, genuinely stimulating.
Oh, yes, I'm sure it is. Belle, dear, if you don't mind, I think I'll go to my room.
Oh.
We're due at the Colemans for cocktails in an hour.
Oh, just do sit a moment longer, Vicky. I have something to tell you both. I don't want to alarm you.
Well,
but
what is it, Belle?
Well, I'm not getting any younger, you know, and lately, well, that is in the past 6 months or so, well, these accidents of mine at the lake, remember, I nearly drowned?
Yes, Belle, we remember.
And then tripping on the hall stair just last month. Why, that fall would have killed me, I know. And then the brakes just a few days ago, the crash and all.
What is it, Belle? What are you trying to say?
Well, you'd have to know sometime, and I do hope you'll approve. Foster, will you come in now, please?
Foster? Who is he?
Yes, Mrs. Hollister.
Oh, Foster, I want you to know my children. This is Mrs. Hollister, Jr., and my stepson, Mr. Hollister. This is Foster.
Mr. and Mrs. Hollister,
how do you do?
Foster's going to drive for me. Drive, and what was it you said I needed, Foster?
Bodyguard, ma'am.
Yes, that's it. A bodyguard.
Gil, you hadn't planned on Foster, had you? When you and your wife, Vicky, were planning those accidents to do away with your stepmother, Belle. It never occurred to you that Belle might hire a driver and bodyguard. And you wonder if she's just appeasing some troublesome little fears, or if she really knows that you and Vicky have been plotting to kill her. Later, as you and Vicky drive down the road to the main gate on your way to the Coleman's cocktail party, well, has the shock of Foster worn off yet?
I'm getting used to the idea. Foster doesn't worry me. In fact, the more I think about it, the more I think he may turn out to be a godsend.
You'll forgive me if I don't get it.
He's broke, I'll bet on it. He undoubtedly needs money desperately. Why, Gil, the more I think of it, the more I suspect that Foster might rob the wall safe.
Well, Vicky,
And Belle might even meet with foul play. Resisting the robbery, of course.
Oh, no.
But what do you think about it?
I don't know. I'll need a little more time to think.
Not too long, darling. I'm going to do some checking on Foster tomorrow. And if I find what I expect to find, the Hollister estate is due to be robbed within a very few days.
It's an interesting thought, isn't it, Gil? And as always, you know that you can count on Vicky. The following day, the two of you drive into town for a little friendly visit with Belle's friend, Mrs. Morgan, the superintendent at the rehabilitation center. Of course, Foster's name is brought into the conversation, and you're pleased with what you hear.
Oh, yes, the poor man's had such a trying time of it. Just couldn't find himself, you know. This job now with Belle is just the thing for him.
I see.
Matter of fact, it was all my idea. I thought Belle could use a chauffeur, and Foster is an excellent driver. Nothing's happened, has it? I mean...
Oh, no, Mrs. Morgan. We were just wondering about Foster, his background and all. One can't be too careful, you know.
Of course.
We didn't want to worry Belle, asking her about it. But as Vicky says...
I understand.
And you know Belle always carries quite a bit of money around with her, keeps a considerable amount of the house, too.
Yes, yes. You know, it never occurred to me. Foster looks so honest.
Oh, and I'm sure he is, Mrs. Morgan.
Well, we'd better be running along, Gil.
Yes.
I still have some shopping to do. Goodbye, Mrs. Morgan.
What's that, dear? Oh, yes. Bye.
The stage is set, isn't it, Gil? And you're certain Mrs. Morgan will remember your conversation with her concerning Foster. You waste little time discussing the details, carefully going over each step of the plan with Vicky. And finally, the night arrives, the night of the attempted robber. You're on the terrace with Vicky and Belle. Foster is there, too. And you're waiting for Belle to go up to her room.
Oh, my, it's such a beautiful evening, isn't it, children?
Mm.
Simply beautiful. You know, I think I'll take a stroll down to the creek. Anyone want to come along?
Oh, I'm afraid I couldn't negotiate that path in these high heels.
Oh, how about you, Gil? Feel like stretching your legs?
Thanks, no. I'm nice and comfortable right where I am.
You want me to come along, Mrs. Hollister?
No, thank you, Foster. You stay here and keep the children company. I shan't be long, a quarter of an hour or so. I'm already going down to the bridge.
You sit back, watch Belle stroll down the path and then out of sight. And you wonder if Belle had a reason for asking Foster to remain behind. Perhaps to keep an eye on you and Vicky. You wonder, too, if she suspects something. That somehow she senses something is going to happen tonight. Finally, you get to your feet, wander inside, and mix yourself a drink. A half hour goes by. Then an hour.
Gil?
Hmm?
She's been gone quite a long time.
You suppose something could have happened, Mr. Hollister?
What?
She mentioned the bridge. That's the one down by the gully?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Sort of old and rickety. I think I better get down there, take a look, huh?
I'll go with you, Foster. Something could have happened at that.
With Foster following close behind, you hurry down the path and finally reach the old suspension bridge which spans the deep, narrow gully. As you start across it, Foster grabs your arm.
Hold it, Mr. Hollister.
Huh?
Look up ahead. The handrail.
It's broken, isn't it, Gil? And the rail hangs down, seeming to point to the bottom of the gully. You look down, and there in the moonlight you see her sprawled out on the rocks below. Belle.
Well, she's dead, Mr. Hollister.
For a moment you stand there, staring down at Belle Hollister. Yes, she's dead at last, Gil. An accidental death. And it actually happened without you or Vicky being involved at all.
Before you call the police, maybe we'd better have an understanding, Mr. Hollister.
What? Well, what do you mean?
Mrs. Hollister was pretty sure that you and your wife were trying to knock her off, make it look like an accident.
Well, that's preposterous.
Is it? She told me about some of those accidents she had. I thought it'd be a good idea if she wrote all that down, put the whole story on paper, turn it over to me.
What?
Yeah, just in case something happened to her that I couldn't prevent.
Well, now, look, Foster. Belle was killed accidentally.
Maybe I saw you push her off the bridge, Mr. Hollister.
Maybe you what?
Yeah, maybe I saw you, and then again, maybe I didn't. It all depends.
Depends
on how much you're willing to pay. Let's go back to the house and talk this over, huh? I think your wife will want to be in on this.
All right, Fox. We'll pay.
Vicky!
I said we'll pay.
I knew you'd see it my way, Mrs. Hollister.
Now, may I see this letter Bell wrote?
Yeah, sure. I got it right here. It's under armed escort, so don't try nothing, huh? I'll hold on to it, if you don't mind. Okay, take a look. You recognize the handwriting?
Yes. We could deny this, you know.
Maybe. But when I tell the police I saw Hollister push her off the bridge, plus this letter, it'll be a cinch.
Well, Gil?
All right. All right.
$20,000 tonight, then we'll break it down to weekly payments, huh?
$10,000 tonight. That's all we can get our hands on.
Okay, I'm not greedy. Well, now that that's settled, you can call the cops. Oh, and Mr. Hollister.
Yes?
When you tell your story to the law, better leave me out of it, huh? When you found her, you were alone.
Why?
Well, if I'm not involved, I won't have to answer questions, tell lies. I'm sensitive that way. Call me when it's over. I'll be up in my room.
You tell the police exactly what happened, don't you, Gil? Without mentioning Foster, of course. It's all over very quickly, and you breathe a sigh of relief when they leave, satisfied that Belle Hollister's death was purely accidental. And then later, when you're alone with Vicky...
I tell you, it was a mistake agreeing to Foster's demand so quickly.
What else could we have done? With that letter from Belle, the police would believe anything Foster told them.
How can we trust him?
We can't. But don't worry. He isn't going to get away with this.
So?
We let him stay on a few days. Then one night you find him trying to get into the safe and...
Ah, the law's gone, I see.
Yes, Foster.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, Foster, that suitcase, what are you doing with it?
What does it look like, pal? I'm leaving. No need for me to stick around.
Leaving?
Yeah, I thought I'd find me a nice little apartment in town. It's kind of dull out here. I crave the bright lights, excitement... Dancing girls. Always have. Only now I can afford it. Well, if you'll give me my dough, I'll be on my way, kids.
The weeks pass, and regularly every Friday evening, when all the servants are out of the house, Foster reappears to make his collection. And you find that Belle's money, now yours, is dwindling away twice as fast now as it did when Belle was alive. Killing Foster won't solve your problem, will it? You know that you've got to get Belle's letter, too. It's important. And then finally, one night, an idea occurs to you. You tell Vicky about your plan, and she agrees. Early that Friday evening, when you're certain Foster is on his way to the estate, you pick up the phone and call the auto club in town.
This is Mr. Foster, Ralph Foster, 327 Sherburn Drive.
Yes, Mr. Foster?
I was in your office a week ago asking for some travel literature.
Yes, sir.
One of your clerks said she'd mail some folders out to me, but I haven't received them yet. Would you find out what the...
Of course. One moment, sir.
What?
Going to check.
It better work.
It will. Don't worry about it. Vicky, car stopping outside.
It's Foster.
All right. Stall him off a few minutes.
Foster?
Yes?
I think I know what happened, sir. You gave me your address as...
327 Sherburn Drive.
We have you listed at 601 Terrace Boulevard.
601 Terrace Boulevard? Oh, I see. My old address.
I'm sorry, sir.
No, my mistake. I should have notified you. Will you send out the pamphlet?
First thing in the morning.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes, we've been expecting you, Mr.
Come on in, Foster.
Hello, Hollister.
You're early.
Yeah, I gotta get back to town. Date.
Sit down, huh? Sit down.
Well, if you don't mind, I...
Please. I have something to talk over with you.
Oh?
Vic, how about fixing some drinks?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Proposition, Hollister?
Foster, how would you like to sell me that letter of Bell's, huh? Get this business over with once and for all.
I might be tempted.
I'll give you $50,000 for it.
Well, Oh, maybe I'd better sit down at that, huh?
Could you get me the letter tonight?
Well, sure. I'd have to go back to town. I'm keeping it in a nice, safe place.
Your apartment?
Yeah. Too bad you don't know where it is, huh, Hollister? Oh. Thank you, Mrs. Hollister.
Well, Foster, are you going to sell us the letter?
Why not?
Well, let's drink to it, then.
All right.
Here.
Yeah, that's good bourbon. Very good. You wouldn't be stupid enough to try pulling a fast one, would you, Hollister?
What?
Fixing this drink, I mean?
Oh, hardly.
Anything happened to me and you'd never find that letter. But somebody else would.
I realize that.
Because if you knew where you could get your hands on that letter, well, it'd be a different matter. Huh?
That's right.
Well, let's get on to business. Iron out some details. I don't have much time.
That's right, Foster. You don't have much time.
It's only a matter of minutes, isn't it, Gil? And the drink begins to show its effect. Foster leans forward in his chair, peering at you, hardly able to keep his eyes open. And then he begins to clutch at his throat.
Hey, what's going on? You, the drink, you did fix it.
That's right, Foster. You'll be dead in another few minutes.
No, you wouldn't. The letter, you don't know where...
Well, we do know where it is, Foster. Your apartment, 601 Terrace Boulevard.
How did you...
Remember the last time you were here, Foster? You took great delight telling me how you were spending my money, nightclubs, a new car, a little side trip. You even joined the auto club.
I'll kill you.
No, you won't. I'll take this gun. Now, Foster, relax. It'll be over soon. You're going on a little trip. This time you're never coming back.
It's almost over now, isn't it, Gil? In a few minutes, Foster will be dead. Then you'll get rid of his body, and using his key, you'll let yourself into his apartment in town, find the letter, and destroy it. You glance over at Vicky. She's smiling as she looks down on Foster. He's still alive, isn't he? But you're not going to delay another moment. With Vicky's help, you get him on his feet, half carry and drag him down the hall. And then as Vicky opens the door...
Hello?
What?
Who are you?
Lieutenant Thompson, Police Department. I was just about to ring when you... Well, who's this? Foster, Ralph Foster. What's the matter with him?
He's sick.
Let's have a look at him. Sergeant.
Right, Lieutenant.
Look, poison. That poison me.
What? Who, Foster? Who poisoned you?
Hollister. His wife.
Sergeant, you better call an ambulance.
Yes, sir.
No, wait a minute. Never mind. Wouldn't do any good. Well, Mr. Hollister?
Oh, Lieutenant, I don't know what he's talking about.
Don't you? Funny. To protect you from him.
What do you mean?
We've been checking up on Foster here ever since Mrs. Morgan down at the center told us about him.
Mrs. Morgan?
Seems she recommended him for a job with you folks a while back.
That's right.
Then Mrs. Morgan got to thinking maybe she'd made a mistake. Told us about it. We looked into the matter. Found that Foster here was wanted back east on a forgery charge.
He was?
Here's a sample of his work. We've already checked it. It's a letter supposedly written by Mrs. Belle Hollister, saying that you and your wife here had tried to kill her.
Why, that's ridiculous.
When we found it in Foster's apartment, we figured he was up to something, and we came out here to warn you.
Wait a minute, that letter, you mean Belle didn't write it?
No. This letter is an out-and-out forgery.
Forgery?
Yes. And it apparently had you fooled. But there's no fooling about your killing Foster.
Valley 103.1.
Suspense. Donald O'Connor in The Visitor.
It was was around 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. I was right in my usual groove. Counterman in Al's Coffee Pot, Route 22 out of Baltimore. Not a bad job for a green guy. $18 a week in my meals. But I was aiming to be a short order cook when I really got the hang of things. Well, as I say, it was the usual afternoon. Not especially busy, but busy enough.
Hey, no kidding, Mac. Where's our Western sandwich?
Oh, here you are. What do you have, mister?
Ham on rye and a cup of coffee, bud.
Coming right up.
Ham on rye and draw one.
Look, kid, I'd like to talk to you.
Yeah? What about?
Have you got a minute?
Yeah, I guess so. Al, take the counter, will you? I'm going to have some coffee.
Okay.
So what's on your mind, mister?
Look, can we go in here?
Yeah.
I've been looking for a long time for someone who looks like you.
Yeah?
Your name could be Bud Owen, couldn't it?
Why should it?
Well, I'm looking for a boy named Bud Owen.
For what?
Disappeared from his home about 3 years ago. Boy from my town. He'd be about your age now, about 18.
17.
Well, that'll do. Well, his folks have just been worried sick about him. Everyone else gave him up for dead. And then I heard you were working here, Bud.
Yeah? Who told you?
Oh, no one told me. I got a note, anonymous. You didn't write it, did you?
No, I didn't write it.
You know, I think I'd have recognized you anyway. You're a lot taller, of course, and you look older, Bud.
Well, anyone would, wouldn't they?
Same ears, though.
I call them wings.
You remember who I am, of course. Mac Burrell. Used to be chief of police.
I'm pleased to meet you again, Mr. Burrell.
Well, Bud Owen. A lot of know-it-alls are sure going to be surprised.
Surprised at what?
Well, to see you. Edgerton's certain to a man that you were drowned 3 years ago off White's Pier.
I was drowned, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, look, Mr. Burrell, just what is your proposition?
Well, Bud, I want you to come home again with me.
Oh.
Of course, things have changed some in Edgerton in 3 years, but not too much. And if you take it easy and if you have a friend to help you over the rough spots, you'll feel right back at home in no time.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Working in a diner. Why, you're depriving yourself of everything a boy could want. A good home, lovely parents, wealthy parents.
Yeah, you make it sound kind of nice at that, Mr. Burrell. But what about you?
Why, Bud, didn't you know that your father has offered a $10,000 reward for anyone who finds you?
No, I didn't know that.
$10,000? And think of your folks. Think how your poor mother has suffered. Think how happy it'd make them.
Uh-huh. Well, Mr. Burrell, if you really think it'll be all right for me to come home...
Sure it will. Oh, it may be a little tough at first, all excitement, people staring at you, but that won't last long. Well, you got to expect some excitement.
Yeah, I suppose it was an event, having a homeboy drown.
Drown, boy? Why, they thought you were murdered.
After I talked to Mr. Burrell for an hour or so, the whole thing sounded pretty darn good. We took the 5 o'clock train for Edgerton. On the way, Mr. Burrell gave me the lowdown on what had been going on in the town for 3 years. How the town thought I was murdered and how my mother and David Cunningham, my stepfather, just wouldn't give up hope that I was still alive. And he told me how my mother hadn't changed anything in my room. She was so sure I'd come back. Although she'd bought new stuff for the rest of the house, new rugs, a couch, things like that. Mr. Burrell described it so plain, I could almost see it. Well, by the time we got to Edgerton, I was feeling pretty sad for my mother. And I thought if I could make her happy, even if it was tough for me, it was worth... Well, it was worth a try.
Brace yourself, youngster. This is it.
Yeah, sure, I'm okay, Mr. Burrell.
Is that you, Burrell?
Yeah, and look who's with me.
Oh. Bud.
Hello, Father.
Come in. Come in, Bud, come in. Here, let me take your suitcase. Here's your mother, Bud.
Hello, Mother,
Judith. Judith, this time it's really Bud. He's come back to us.
Oh, Bud.
It's all right, darling. It's all right now.
Oh, my big baby.
You're so tall, I can hardly kiss you.
Come on, let's go into the living room. No. Come along, Burl.
I always knew I'd be silly when you came back. Here, let me push your hair down. Now you look more like my bud.
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't have recognized this room. Isn't the couch new?
Yes, and the rugs and the drapes.
Yeah.
I don't know how we'll ever be able to thank you, Burl.
Oh, I seeing Judith so happy is reward enough.
Oh, yes, yes, that reminds me. We'll drop into my office tomorrow, and I'll take care of that other more tangible reward.
Well, Mother, I don't know how to begin. I mean, to tell you how sorry...
Oh, don't tell me anything, darling. Nothing matters except that you're back.
That's the spirit, Judith. That's the
spirit. Goodness, your right hand, Bud. It's all bandaged.
Oh, that's nothing much. I burned it working in the diner.
Oh,
it's nothing much.
Well, folks, it's been a long day for an old man. I guess I'll run along.
Right away, Mr. Burrow? Well, you just got here.
Oh, you'll be seeing plenty of me, Bud. Right now, you should be wanting to get acquainted with your folks again. I'll see you tomorrow, Dave. Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Well, have you noticed, Judith, how deep Bud's voice is now?
Huh? Why, yes. It was just a little pipe when he left. It was beginning to break, wasn't it, Bud?
Oh, gosh, I guess so. I sure must have sounded awful.
And he shaves, David. Every day, Snooky?
Well, gosh, not quite.
Oh, now, really, David, I don't think that's so funny.
Well, I can't help it.
Why, that sounds like Ellen. Isn't that nice? Let her in, David.
Oh, certainly, sure.
Ellen Woods.
Why, who else, Bud?
Does she still live next door?
Of course, the Woods have always lived there. Ellen, dear, we have such a surprise.
My turn! Angel, it's simply fabulous. Let me kiss you,
you little... Hey, take it easy.
Oh, Bud, you're just gigantic, a regular beanpole. Oh, Bud, I can't wait for Joe to see you.
Joe?
I called him as soon as I heard he's coming over here. It's all right, Mrs. Cunningham.
Oh, of course, Ellen. Sure. I've forgotten. It'll mean so much to Joe. You know about Joe, Bud?
Yes. Mr. Burl told me. I didn't know before.
This town's got a lot to make up to that young man.
My folks wouldn't let me see Joe, Bud.
Yeah?
Well, they thought that Joe was the last person who saw you, and then... Well, he admitted you'd quarrel.
But your mother and I never had a moment's doubt,
Bud.
Oh,
no.
And I'm thankful for that.
There. That's Joe. That's Joe now. Joe, it's true. Bud's here.
Ellen moaned. I ran all the way. She said that...
Yeah, Joe, it's me.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Well, pal, I hear I owe you an apology or something.
Skip it, pal.
Now, Joe, we know how hard it's been for you. Only now it's over.
It didn't matter, Mrs. Cunningham. I've learned to put up with a lot.
Judith, dear, let's go upstairs. Let's give the young folks a chance by themselves.
All right, David. Hmm? But don't stay up too long, Bud.
No.
You'll need lots of sleep.
I won't, Mother.
And don't forget to turn off the light.
Okay.
Good night, children.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
What'll we do? Cut a rug or chew the fat?
Suit yourself.
Joe, don't talk that way to Bud. You might remember he's my friend, and he certainly was yours.
Yeah, I guess he was.
Now, look, Joe, I can see how you're sore at me, but don't take it out on Ellen.
Kindly don't start messing between Ellen and me.
Joe, please.
Okay, do I have to make a speech? So you're home now, Bud, and I'm the last one to kick. But when you toss it all off by saying you owe me an apology or something, well, maybe it's not easy to remember we were friends.
Well, I didn't know what to say.
I know I tried to remember we were friends when the whole town was sure I'd killed you. And I tried to remember it when the draft board listed me as undesirable because they thought I was guilty.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, I even tried to remember we were friends when for 3 years people crossed the street so they wouldn't have to speak to me. And people got up and walked out of the room when I came in. And when...
Oh, gosh, Joe, I didn't realize that. I am sorry, Joe, honest.
Joe, you should be the first one to walk around town with Bud right tomorrow morning. If you both like it, I'll go with you.
It's all right with Bud.
Is it? Boy, I'm going to need company.
Then it's a date, huh?
No kidding, Bud. I'm glad you're home, fella. No hard feelings?
Oh, gosh, no, Joe.
So long, Bud.
So long.
Bud?
Yes, Mother.
Are you coming up to bed now, dear?
Yeah, I might as well.
You knew, Bud, about Trixie?
Trixie?
Do you realize you've never even asked about her?
Oh, Trixie. Well, that's right, I didn't.
After all, she was your dog. And you know what they say about a boy and his dog. Oh, poor thing. When you didn't come back, she just wandered off.
Oh, gee, that's tough, all right.
And you didn't even ask about her. Oh, but I guess you can't be expected to remember everything.
No, I guess I can't remember everything. I went upstairs to my room. It was just like Mr. Burrell told me it would be. Everything seemed to have gone all right so far. I undressed and turned out the light. But before I got into bed, I locked the door. Just in case. Kind of late for breakfast.
Oh, that's all right, darling. We know you needed the sleep.
Sit right in your old place, Bud.
Yeah, well, sure.
Your mother and I have been mooning over old pictures, have you, son?
Yes, really, Bud. Except for the ears and something around the eyes, you've changed so that I can hardly recognize you. Now, look, here's the last picture before you went away. Why, it's almost frightening the way you've grown.
Oh, Judith, darling, you wouldn't want the boy to be a midget, would you?
Oh,
well, sure,
no.
Sure, he's taller. But look at his hair, the way he stands.
Yeah, I sure was a goon. Well, you should have been glad to get rid of me.
Oh,
look,
no.
Bud, what else I found.
What?
All your school compositions from the first grade on. Here's one you wrote on Alexander the Great.
Ouch, Mother, don't be so careless with those things or I'll die of blushing.
Why, Bud, I think this was very good for your age. You were barely 14 when you wrote it. See, it's Mark B, so it can't be so terrible.
Oh, your least little scribble is a great thing to your mother. Well, I'd better get off to the office. Drop in to see me if you have time, Bud.
Why, sure, Father. I'll do that.
Good, good. Goodbye, Judith, darling. I'll be home for dinner.
Goodbye, David. How about some hot coffee, Bud?
Yes, thanks.
Yes, Snooky. Bud, there's something important I want to discuss with you. It's about my will.
Your will?
You know how your father... Well, David is about my money, Bud. Mm-hmm. He never wanted to touch it or even have me put him in my will. He's so proud about things like that, and I do have so much more than he ever will.
Well, sure. I remember. How much money is it, anyway?
Why, you know, Bud, there's about $150,000 your grandfather left.
Yeah.
Then there were the four houses on Elm Street that Aunt Carolyn left, and the income from them. I haven't used any of it. So it amounts to quite a lot by now.
Oh, gosh, yes, it must have that.
Well, after you left, even though David didn't want me to, I changed the will, leaving everything to him.
Why, sure, that sounds fine to me.
Ah, yes, but now you're back. I think the best thing would be to just turn it all over to you now. Oh. Set up a trust fund. You could use the income when you start to college, and later maybe you'd want to set yourself up in some kind of business. And I know it'll please David.
But, Mother, gee whiz, it's swell of you, but don't you think you should wait?
Wait for what, darling? Oh,
well, until you know me better. I would know what to do with all that money, and maybe I'd mess things up.
Oh, silly. The bank takes care of everything it always has for me. Now, all you have to do is to sign these papers here.
Sign, but I can't, Mother. You see, my hand, the bandage.
Oh, isn't that a shame? I forgot you couldn't write.
Well, it ought to be all right in a couple of days so I can take the bandage off.
Oh, somebody's whistling for you, Bud. My, that sounds like old times.
Oh, it's Ellen and Joe. Yeah. They're going to take me out and show me around the town. Well, I guess I'll have to face the music.
You know you'll love it. You're going to be a regular hero.
Yeah, but I don't feel much like a hero now.
Now you're in for it, Bud.
Oh, Bud, you're really real, and you've grown but divine.
Hey, you're choking me.
Oh, I've just been telling everybody you're back. It's too sensational. It's like having a new boy in town, and do we need some?
Oh, gosh, I shouldn't think you'd have any trouble. Why, you're cuter than ever.
Listen to him. He's got a line. Isn't that something?
Bud, the best thing you ever called her before was Buzzard Egg.
Well, gosh, I called her something besides that once in a while.
Well, you did call her Mary Louise.
Oh, well, of course I called her that. Gee, it's swell to see you, Mary Louise.
Bud Owen, you bad boy. Are you going to recognize me or aren't you?
Oh, gee, it's good to see you. How are you anyway?
Well, you're not too grown up to kiss old Mrs. Callahan the way you always did.
Oh, I'll say I'm not Mrs. Callahan. Here.
Oh, well, now that's better. I heated enough bottles for you and washed enough of your diapers, too. So don't let me catch you putting on airs.
Oh, no, ma'am, I won't.
Well, Goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
What's the matter? Didn't you recognize her?
Oh, Mrs. Callahan? Well, of course I did.
Well, then why didn't you call her what you always used to? Couldn't you see she was sore?
Well, I... Yes, I did.
Bud, you used to call her Aunt Seeley.
Couldn't believe it, but I daren't refute the evidence of my senses. It's the Owen boy, Bud Owen.
Why, I'm glad to see you, sir.
I just saw your mother. Heard you were back. She told me she was bringing you down to my office in a day or two.
Oh, yes, she told me.
Your mother is one in a million, young man. She thinks only of your welfare. I hope you've learned to appreciate her.
Well, yes, sir, I have.
Well, I just wanted to check on the news. And no nonsense, my boy. You do as your mother says.
Yeah, goodbye. Hey, what did he mean, no nonsense?
Don't you know?
I guess so. Mother told me this morning we had to go to the lawyer's office.
Oh, Bud.
I've been waiting for you to outsmart yourself, and this is it.
Oh, I don't get it.
You sure don't, Bud.
Give him a chance, Joe.
Because it happens that's not Mr. Reedy, the lawyer, but Dr. Sterling, the dentist.
I talked fast, and Ellen took my side, and we got Joe calmed down. But I knew he was going to watch me like a hawk from then on. That afternoon, Ellen, Joe, and Mary Louise got the really snazzy idea of going to the beach. My father knocked off work and drove us down, sort of to celebrate my homecoming. Oh, it was really a hot day, so when we got there, the others made a beeline for the water. But I didn't because of my bandaged tan. I stayed around the beach club near the pool. When it began to get dark, we all dressed and went down to White's restaurant for a seafood dinner. Then we walked out on the pier, the same pier where I was supposed to have been murdered. I remember I said something about taking the body back to where X marks the spot, and everybody laughed.
Oh, Bud. Gee, isn't it heavenly out here?
Yeah. Gee, the breeze is swell.
Wonderful. Well, Bud, it looks like you and Joe are right back where you were 3 years ago.
Yes, I guess so, Father.
This railing's just where we stood, isn't it? When you and I had our fight?
Yes, about.
Hey, what's the phobia people have looking down from tall buildings? Gee, I get it looking down at the water from up here.
That shouldn't worry you, Ellen. You swim like a fish. Now, me, I should really feel funny.
Well, you about ready to go home, children? I don't want Judith to worry.
Oh, yeah, all right, Mr. Cunningham. She hasn't been a heavenly
girl. Bud, wait a minute.
Come on, Joe.
Wait a minute. There are a couple of things I want to...
Now, later, Joe. Ellen and Father...
Everybody knew Bud Owen couldn't swim. That was why when you disappeared, they thought I'd pushed you off the pier and you drowned.
Now...
Bud Owen couldn't swim. But this afternoon, when you thought we were all at a good, safe distance, I walked up to the beach club looking for you. And I saw you swimming in the pool.
Yeah, but I learned...
And your bandage was off. Well, start talking. Or do I do the talking to the cops?
Now listen, Joe. You've got to wait. You've got to give me time.
No one in this town should be gladder to have Bud Owen come back than me. After all, I've taken plenty because he disappeared. But rather than let Mrs. Cunningham be fooled...
Well, that's what I mean, Joe. You've got to give me time to square things. Just a little time.
Well, you better move fast, brother.
Now, Joe, no matter what you think you know, I haven't hurt anybody.
Not yet.
And if you give me time, maybe nobody will be hurt. I went to Mr. Burrell the next morning and talked about everything. About how people were making cracks at him about the $10,000 reward and the whole mess. I knew things were moving awfully fast, and I told Mr. Burrell he had to help me. That night, when she finished her coffee, my mother said she was awfully tired. My father, David, saw her upstairs to bed. I looked out the window and saw Mr. Burrell's car pull up to the curb in front of Ellen's house. I knew he was going to do everything he could, but by this time, I was scared. Well, at bedtime, my stepfather fixed some sandwiches and we drank some milk. Then he came up to my room with me and sat down to talk.
Well, I see your mother's changing your room around.
Yeah, I guess women like to fuss around and so forth.
That's a fact, and there's no use opposing them.
I guess that's right.
By the way,
What is your real name?
Bud Owen.
You don't need to be afraid of me. I've protected you so far.
Why have you?
I ask you first. What's your real name?
Bud Owen.
You're stubborn, aren't you? You know, at first, I thought you'd work this little scheme out all by yourself, or with Burrow. But there's someone else involved, isn't there?
Who do you think?
What about that bandage?
Well...
Take it off. Well, well, well. Not even a scar. I don't suppose you'd mind writing with it, now that it's healed.
No. I don't mind. What shall I write?
Well, suppose we take this little composition of yours on Alexander the Great. Here. Would you copy this this sentence, say, on the top of page 3?
Why not?
Mm-hmm. And to make it a fair comparison, write your name, Bud Owen.
Bud Owen. Here you are.
So, she taught you Bud's handwriting, too.
Who did?
My wife. Do you think I didn't know what was going on? Every move she made gave her away. Why is she in such a rush to change her will?
I don't know. Why?
She thought she was being so smart, trying to pass you off, trying to trap me. But I was one person who knew you weren't Bud.
Yeah, what makes you so sure I'm not Bud?
I know. Isn't that enough? I know.
I see. Well, don't you think we better get my mother in on this?
Yes. Yes, I think perhaps we better. She's asleep. You'll have to wake her.
My mother. Mother? Well, she's... Mother! Mother! Oh, when I came to, I had an awful pain in my head. I was in my room on the bed, and Ellen and Joe and Mr. Burrow were there. For a minute, I didn't know what had happened, and then I remembered... Mother! Where's my mother?
She's all right, Bud. She's in the hospital. He gave her enough of those sleeping pills to kill a horse, but she's all right now.
How do you feel, Bud?
All right, I guess.
Oh, it's a good thing you had us standing by tonight, son. Why, he had you trussed up like a turkey. He was going to hang you.
Oh, gee, Mr. Burley must have been crazy. I guess he wanted to get us both out of the way before Mother could change that will.
And for crying out loud, Bud, why didn't you let me in on this? I thought...
Well, I hated to do it, Joe, honest, but I had to. Somebody had to be the guinea pig.
It was my idea, Joe. I sent the note to Mr. Burrow. I really found Bud in that hash house.
Yeah, but if you'd let me know...
We knew that if Bud could fool you, if you thought he was a phony, he could fool everybody, even David Cunningham.
Yeah, you see, Joe, for 3 years, I suspected that guy. He pushed me off the pier that night when I was only a kid. But I knew I was a kid, and it was just his word against mine, so I ran away. I kept putting off coming here, but I swore that someday I'd trap him, and tonight I did. Because when he said he knew I wasn't Bud Owen, I knew he thought he'd kill me.
You took one whale of a chance tonight, Bud. He had you framed pretty. Another half hour, we'd have found your mother dead. You strung up, and that suicide note you wrote popped up on the dresser.
Suicide note? Why, I just copied a sentence out of an old composition, something about Alexander the Great.
Alexander the Great? Listen to this. It is terrible what awful crimes are done for greed and ambition. Signed, Bud Owen.
Oh, sure. Well, you see, I was writing... What? I signed that? Holy... Well, that's about all. I didn't know how my mother would take it, having my stepfather to turn out to be such a heel. But once she got over the dope he slipped her, she was fine. As happy as a lark over me. And Joe and Ellen? Well, they got married, but quick. Mary Louise and I are going together now. And I've been playing hard to get, but gee, she can see through me in a minute. I guess I never could fool anybody.
recall that Maggie is my girl, and her folks, they had us in the whirl. When we went out, each night we always found they were following us all around. There was her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. Oh, I never saw Maggie alone. I turned my mind inside out just to try to figure out how I could somehow get Maggie alone. I got the measles, rushed to her house. She was alone, and when her folks got home, there was a sign hanging there saying, quarantine, beware. Now I always see Maggie alone. There was her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. Oh, her family we just couldn't lose. And so without hesitation, I made a reservation for taking a long ocean cruise. The day the boat sailed, we stood on shore. I wasn't sore. The tickets that I bought were for her father and mother, her sister and her brother. Now I always see Maggie alone. There was her father, her mother, her sister and her brother. Oh, we knew we must do something soon. Then finally we had our say on the day we stowed away on a rocket ship bound for the moon. When we got up there, I looked below. I was no joke, 'cause through my telescope I saw her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. And I knew I had Maggie. Yes, I knew I had Maggie. Now I'll always have Maggie alone.
Moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.